Recording. Just so
Okay.
everybody knows, IOC meetings are typically recorded and a Google transcription of the meeting is collected. The audio from the recording is posted to the ADOA website. The Google transcription of the meeting is used for written meeting minutes. You're good to go.
Okay, this session of the DDD District West Independent Oversight Committee is now called to order. The date is May 7th, 2025. And the time is 6:02. Do we have anyone who has to disclose a conflict of interest? If there is, the committee member needs to disclose why. Any committee members with a conflict of interest? Okay. So we have to do our introductions. And last time we whipped it around for time. So I guess if we just do it quick. I'm Deidre Friedman. I'm the chair until you guys elect somebody else to take my place. Anytime anybody wants it, they can be chair. I'm here as a legal expert because I'm a retired attorney from New York. And my son Andy was a DDD member for 17 years. So let me see who else is next on my list. Pat?
I'm Pat Thundercloud. I have a son who has Down syndrome. He's 43 years old.
Okay, and Pat is a retired nurse practitioner, so she's one of our medical experts.
I'm a retired physician's assistant.
Oh, I'm sorry. She's a retired PA. So our next medical expert, Crystal.
Hello, I'm Crystal Fox, and I am a psychiatric nurse, as well as have a daughter with autism, who's in the back making her teething sounds. And take that out. Yeah, she's a DDD member.
Okay, Cynthia.
Hi, Cynthia McCluskey. I'm on the board of Mariah, and I'm also the advocacy director for Autism Society of Greater Phoenix. I'm a mother to an almost 27-year-old who was a DDD ALTEX member until he was 12. And I am an independent insurance broker and an expert in Medicaid, Medicare, and Marketplace.
Okay. Jamie?
Hi, everyone. My name is Jamie. My specialty is education. I'm adjunct faculty at Grand Canyon University, all aspects of literacy with a specialty in dyslexia interventions and remediations for struggling readers. I'm also the associate director for a group home in the West Valley and a private tutor to students who struggle with dyslexia. And I am the guardian of a gentleman who's 31 who lives in a group home as well.
And Pam?
Hi, everybody. Pam Dewey. I am a registered nurse, retired from full-time work, doing some contract work right now. I have a grandson who's a DDD member, with autism spectrum disorder. And I guess that's it for today. Yeah.
Okay, Michelle, you want to have everybody else introduce themselves, please, so I don't miss anybody?
Sure, that's not a problem at all. Larry, you want to start us off, pretty please?
I'm first. Yeah, sure. Larry Allen, Arizona Department of Administration.
Thank you. Frederica?
Hello, this is Frederica Graham with Access.
Dawn?
Hi, everybody. This is Dawn McReynolds with United Healthcare OIFA.
Wendy?
Wendy Herring with Mercy Care OIFA.
Mary?
Hi, everyone. Mary DiCarlo, the program administrator over behavior supports and services with DDD's Behavioral Health Administration.
Rachel?
Hi, everyone. My name is Rachel Olerking. I am the DDD Stakeholder Resolution Manager.
Sandra?
Hi, everyone. My name is Sandra Fields, and I am the Nursing Program Administrator with Healthcare Services at DDD.
Roman?
Hello, everyone. My name is Roman Hernandez. I'm the Stakeholder Resolution Specialist with DDD.
Angie?
Good evening, everyone. My name is Angie Benny, and I am the CARES Bureau Chief with DDD.
Christina?
Michelle, I knew you were calling me right when I was taking a drink. I'm Christina. I am the DDD Office of Individual and Family Affairs Administrator.
Sorry about that. Diane?
Hi, good evening. Diane Kress, DDD Quality Assurance Manager for District West.
Joan?
Good evening, everyone. I'm Joan McQuaid, and I'm under the Office of Individual and Family Affairs in the CARES unit, and I'm here supporting Michelle and Morgan.
Morgan?
Hello, Morgan O'Hara, DDD Independent Oversight Committee Liaison in the CARES Administration.
And my name is Michelle Rademacher. I'm a DDD Independent Oversight Committee Liaison as well. And under the OIF umbrella here of CARES, is there anybody that I missed? I do apologize. Okay, you're good to go.
Sorry about that. We're going to do the call to public to get it out of the way. This is the time for the public to comment. Members of the committee may not discuss items that are not specifically identified on the agenda. Comments are limited to 3 minutes per person. Do you have anybody from the public who wants to comment? Okay. I'm going to take that as a no because there's no one on the call from the general public. So let's move on to our first item, which is inter and intra-agency problem solving. So Michelle, whoever we have to do the presentation, take it away.
Great. So good evening, everyone. We're going to start off our presentation with Rachel Olerking talking a little bit about our interdisciplinary teams and kind of that escalation process.
Hi, everyone. I will jump into the presentation. All right. I already introduced myself, but this is going to be over the stakeholder resolution team processes. All right, so I am the Stakeholder Resolution Manager. I am over the Stakeholder Resolution Team. The DDD Stakeholder Resolution Team was established almost 3 years ago. This is a team that represents the division as impartial representatives and consultants to internal and external stakeholders. This includes the Governor's Office, Access, various legislatures, including the Governor's Office, and then also the DES Director's Office. We help by resolving conflict and protecting against unfair treatment. We advocate for fairness, and we act as a conduit between conflicting parties to serve the mission of the division. All right, so now I'm gonna go over two of our interdisciplinary teams. This is a
Hey, Rachel.
Yes.
Rachel, because we're informal, instead of reading the slides, which we can do because you're going to provide the slides for us, can you just give us a quick overview of each slide? We would really appreciate it. Thanks.
Yeah, I plan to do that right now. All right, so this is where I'm going to be going over the two processes for in which the support coordination teams can elevate cases to have interdisciplinary team meetings. So we have two types. We have the immediate response team, which we reference as the IRT, and then we have the central office interdisciplinary team meeting, which we call the COADT. The main difference between the two of these meetings or escalation pathways is one is an emergency response. That is something that needs to be resolved within 24 hours or at a 24-hour basis. So this is something that's very critical to the member, something that is going to be altered if we do not act within a 24-hour time frame. The COEDT is a more systemic or something that is non-emergency at that time. So this is going to be where we discuss maybe more enhanced rates. This is where we discuss vendor call processes or really creative thinking outside of the box as far as behavioral plans, getting supports and services in place. All right. I'm going to move to the next slide. A little more on the ERT, the immediate response team, is this is the criteria that needs to be met on this slide for when a case can be elevated to the immediate response team. So
Rachel,
go ahead.
As far as the IOC is concerned, what's our path to accessing the immediate response team? Do we do what we've been doing and contact Christina Hedges and CC Michelle, or what do we do?
So these processes are not meant for external. This is an internal tool that is intended for support coordination's use. It can be recommended by other team members on a member's planning team to request that something be elevated internally. But this is essentially resources in which a support coordinator elevates to clinical and non-clinical leadership within the division to obtain additional resources, get authorization. So exactly what I understand the IOC requested was, how does this process occur? And this is how this would occur through support coordination.
Okay, so say there's an emergency, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do we tell families to do? I mean, I tell families to contact Christina, and that sets the ball rolling. Would we tell families to contact their support coordinator? The support coordinator has 48 hours to get back to them. If it's an emergency, what are families to do?
Right. So I'm describing that actually on this slide, Dee. So in an instance in which a family needs support or a member needs support that is urgent in a 24-hour situation, this is that criteria. So they can contact their support coordinator. They can contact customer service. There's really no wrong door here. They can be elevated through those pathways. And so once they meet this criteria, which it sounds like in what you're describing, it would, then these meet the criteria of an immediate response team. Go ahead, Cynthia. I think you might be on mute, Cynthia. I think you might still be on mute. You can always chat if you need as well. Do you want me to pause and wait until Cynthia comes back?
No, we lost her, so she must be having internet connection problems.
Okay.
If you don't mind, just...
All right. So again, there's no wrong door. If you have teams contact Christina, or if you have them contact customer service, or even our after hours team, those individuals, along with the support coordination team, will elevate through these pathways. It's just done through the support coordinator to ensure that the appropriate parties are elevating.
Rachel, you said after hours team.
Correct.
How do people access that after hours team? Where's that information found?
Sure. This is our customer service team. Angie, do you want to speak more to the after hours team and how the phone line is really the same, and then it transitions to our after hours team?
Sure. Anytime anybody has a crisis, that of course they would call 911 first, but that they need to reach customer service after hours, they call the regular customer service phone number. At 5 o'clock, it turns over from our regular customer service team to our after hours team, and they triage those calls get information out to anybody that would need it. If it's truly an emergency.
Dee, I'm back.
Go ahead. We can hear you.
Okay, so this is an issue I've had, and so I had a lot of concerns. So I have families who've used your phone number and nobody's answered the phone on the weekend, hasn't responded on the weekend. So how do we know that this is actually happening? Who's monitoring that to make sure that things are being elevated? What's the accountability around this?
Mm-hmm.
Because it isn't consistent. So I'd love to know some more information about how you're verifying that this is actually happening.
Well, we, as far as after hours calls are concerned, okay. Cynthia, we can't verify that a call didn't come in, but we do have a telephone system that records all calls, and that's 24 hours, whether it's the customer service 8-to-5 team or the after hours team, we use a phone system. So if ever there's a family that says, you know, we called on Saturday at 1 o'clock, we can actually go into the system and see.
Because it is happening. So I want to know where that goes to, because families call, they leave messages, nobody responds.
Mm.
So who's accountable to that? How can we elevate that to make sure that someone's being responsible?
So if you get a report that somebody has called and no one called back, please send that information, including the phone number, to me so I can research it. So I have access to that phone system, the after hours area manager has access to that phone system. Now, if they're calling the support coordinator's direct cell phone after hours, that's a whole nother thing. But the customer service phone number, the 1-888-844-770-9500, if you're getting a report on that, I need to know that. We need to absolutely escalate that.
Because we are getting reports on that, and it's been very inconsistent.
If you already have a report and you know who it was and the phone number they called from, send it over to me. I'll put my email address. I think you have it, but I'll put it in chat, because we can absolutely trace that back to the time, date and time that they called.
And but also monitoring to make sure that it's really happening.
Say that again.
What's your quality assurance to make sure that this whole system is working correctly? Because it shouldn't be on me or anybody else.
Sure. Yeah.
Elevate it to you, right? So what is DDD's mechanism to verify that this is actually happening?
So the after hours team runs a little bit differently, so I don't have a response to that. I'm happy to go and get that information for you and report back. This is the first time I'm hearing that there was an issue, so I will do what I can to get you that information, absolutely. And then I'm happy to research the ones that you already know exist. But as far as what their quality assurance and call tracking, as far as outside of the system, what they're doing, if they're spot checking, I don't have that answer right out the gate, but I'm happy to get that for you, Cynthia.
I would really appreciate that. And I'll just let you know that I know that law enforcement has tried to even use that phone number to reach somebody in a crisis situation and did not get a response, which is how they found their way to me.
Mm.
So I have a lot of concerns around this phone number issue over the last couple of years.
Sure.
And then to follow up around the support coordinators, are support coordinators supposed to be giving out their cell phone numbers to families?
They have
supposed to be reachable outside of 9 to 5.
They have a state cell phone because we're not based out of offices anymore. They no longer have desk phones. So the only phone number they would be providing them is a state cell phone number. And families, we can't control whether or not a support coordinator says, you know, call me at 6, because they might be working a flex schedule. But typically what I would say is that they wouldn't normally be communicating with families outside of after hours, or families expecting a support coordinator to respond to them after hours.
Okay, so then the policy is really that if it's after hours, it should always be the 800 number and not going to the support coordinator, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Yeah. And then when we're talking about things like maybe a member dying, what is the elevation? So I can understand when someone calls and leaves a message. How do you define an emergency versus a non-emergency, whether you're going to be responding in a timely manner or going to take the whole weekend to respond until Monday morning?
We do have a policy on incident reporting and what is considered a critical incident. I'll have to pull that for you. I can't speak to it right off the top of my head, and I don't want to misspeak. So if you want to give me a few minutes, or if Michelle, you want to take that one down, we can provide those policies to the team.
That would be great. I would love to see the policy, just because I really want to make sure that families understand exactly what's supposed to happen, who they're supposed to contact, and in what time frame they're supposed to be responded to. So like understanding when the system sees it as an emergency versus a non-emergency would be, I think, helpful.
Absolutely. And I think it's important to also outline, like, there are emergencies that should go directly to 911, police department, and not necessarily be or to DCS after hours or APS after hours, not necessarily to DDD, but I'll get that information for you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Angie, when you're getting that emergency response information, I know that there's a policy, but I can't quote you chapter and verse, but I know that there's a policy that all DDD vendors are supposed to be contacting you, especially hospitals.
Yeah.
Do you know how soon they're supposed to be contacting you
to report an incident?
I mean DDD. Well, they're supposed to be telling DDD that the member's in the hospital so you can do the support coordination. Do you know how quickly, and do you know if they're actually doing that? And if they're not, what are we doing to make sure that they do?
We do have Sandra on the call, and she's from Healthcare Services. Sandra, do you happen to know what the time frame is for hospitalization to notify DDD?
Yeah, that's going to vary, because we get most of that information directly from the health plans, because they're notified when a member goes in the hospital. And then there's some information that our UM team can get from going into the health information exchange, but not all facilities put information in there. So we're really at the mercy of the health plans and the health information exchange for notification of hospitalization. Once we get the hospital notification, and my team checks every business day, they send out a notification to the support coordinators. And then if there is a district nurse involved, to them as well. And that usually, I mean, they do them every day. So if they get them, you know, today, they're done today. But you don't know how long sometimes the hospital takes to find out that the individual is in there. Now, if someone notifies us early, because our UM manager, you know, a lot of people know who she is, that notification will go out sooner rather than later.
So Sandra, there is not a DDD person who's part of discharge planning when a member is discharged from a hospital?
Yes, there is. So,
well, you were asking about emergency when somebody goes into the hospital and how DDD should be notified. Discharge planning is a whole nother process. And right. Yes, there are our district nurses, as well as the support coordinator, are engaged in that discharge planning process.
Exactly. But we have for the hospital notification. Now, remember how many hospitals there are in the state of Arizona? Mm-hmm. And they're not required necessarily to notify us, but they do have to notify the insurer, okay, which in a roundabout sort of way, that's us. So that's why many times the information first goes to the health plan, if that's who's insuring the individual, and then they send us a notification. But our team is diligent in trying to check the information exchange daily to see if they have members that are identified in there. Now, a lot of times how they're admitted, if that information is put as part of their admission, it's going to help us determine, you know, if they're one of our members or not. If it's not included, or if it's, I want to say, buried in the admission, it's more difficult for us to, you know, determine, because we, you know, we literally would have to know every person that's hospital in the state of Arizona every day in order to figure that out. So we kind of have a process for scanning that information.
As soon as the health plan is contacted, mm-hmm. the health plan knows exactly what line of business the member is on.
So the health plan has a process. That's what I'm saying. They notify us. But again, when is the person admitted? When is that information sent over to the health plan? Because it's a notification process. It's not going to be the second that they're taking. I worked in the hospital too as the director of case management. So the second that you're admitted, that's not necessarily when the health plan is notified. You know, but they will be notified as a part of that process. So usually if it's part of that admission, the questions that are asked, the case manager will note that. When the UM team from the hospital sometimes looks at that information, that's shared with the health plan, mostly because they're trying to determine, you know, is the stay proper, right? So utilization management. Why is the person in here? What's our anticipated length of stay? Who are the people that we need to contact? That's a process.
Dee?
Yeah.
Can I ask a question, please?
Sure.
So one of the issues that we've had in the past is the lack of communication between DDD and the health plans. One of the things that we've been told in the past is there's now monthly meetings where the health plans and DDD are meeting to make sure that there is actually truly coordinated care and there's no issues with systems. Is that still happening?
So we have weekly meetings, not monthly meetings. So every week we meet with both health plans to discuss, and we go through the list of who they have been notified as hospitalized. And we try to make sure that both of us have that information and that all the key players are identified. And if there's issues with the admission or the discharge, that we are all, how can I put it, that it's collaborated and we're participating in it. So whether it's United Healthcare or Mercy Care, we meet with both of them each week to go over those things. Yes.
That's an improvement from what you guys used to do. So I'm glad to hear that. And does that include like meeting with the crisis? I forgot the name of Solera. Are you guys doing any meetings with that to make sure that you guys are getting communicated with in an appropriate manner about crisis? And then also 911, if someone's hitting 911, is that going to make its way to you or the health plan, or is that still a gap?
So it depends. We'll know about it if an incident report is filed. We'll know about it if they're hospitalized or if they're held in the waiting room. And Mary, I think, was going to comment on some of that, because if it's behavioral health, her team has a process as well for making sure that all those members are identified as quickly as possible.
Correct. And I want to be sure, because we have a lot of great information in the slides, that we're not getting kind of too far. But to answer your question on crisis, the Behavioral Health Administration meets with Solari as well as the MCOs every quarter to discuss crisis. We talk about trends. Additionally, the Behavioral Health Administration receives a report each day that identifies crisis calls, whether or not crisis was dispatched, the reason for dispatch, and if that person was transported to a higher level of care. Our team takes and tracks and trends that information and kind of passes it along to support coordination, as well as, you know, if there's something that can be worked on through a behavior plan, we loop those folks in as well. I don't want to do them play on words here, justice, but we do have a justice liaison team that works very frequently with the various police departments. We have a community engagement specialist that's focused on fire, EMS, kind of police. And then through our stakeholder resolution process, police departments have contacted the division to kind of collaborate further. So there are kind of different mechanisms for us to be in communication with those various agencies.
I can give you feedback. If Diana Davis Wilson's husband, who is a Gilbert PD, doesn't know who your person is, then you guys do not have a connection to law enforcement that's strong enough. And it definitely needs to be improved. And there's definitely a gap when people are using 911, especially group homes. So is there a way that DDD is tracking group home 911 calls and verifying that you're actually getting incident reports when they make those calls?
So we don't currently get like a report on those 911 calls unless it was filed as part of an incident report. But I can say, and Angie, please feel free to jump in to speak a little bit about our new police liaison. But myself went to Gilbert Police Department a couple of weeks ago, and we have training scheduled for them in June. And very excited, next week I'm actually going to do a ride along with their crisis response team. So we are having those conversations, but definitely open to any additional feedback where there are gaps that we can help improve that.
We're actually meeting, I think on the, did you say this already? The 6th of June, I think, is our first meeting to present to Gilbert PD. So that's the kickoff. And from there, Molly will be presenting and coordinating with several police departments. She's already rolling out her training.
I know historically in the past that first responders had database problems. And this was about 4 or 5 years ago where they couldn't keep stuff on file. But I've heard a rumor that they're improving their databases. Do you know, is there any way for DDD to let municipalities know all the group homes within the physical area of each municipality?
And I definitely think that's something that we could potentially take offline and find out. I don't know of kind of a formal process, but for example, I learned this last week when I was with the Gilbert PD team, is they have within the town of Gilbert a group home kind of licensing group. And so that team has pulled all of the records of licensed facilities within the town of Gilbert, and they're very aware of that. I'm sure that varies from precinct to or different municipalities. But that is an area that we have dedicated people kind of working to improve that relationship.
We really need tracking and trending. It's not that the law enforcement departments don't know who the group homes are and aren't aware of the over usage of 911. It's that DDD seems to be unfamiliar with that. And so we have requested in the past, and now that you have some new people in place and Leah's not there anymore, I think it's really important that DDD up their game in their communication with group homes and their use of 911. They tend to overuse 911 because they don't appreciate crisis and how long they take to respond. And so I would really like to see something happening with that, because that's an undue burden on law enforcement when the group homes aren't being held accountable.
Definitely.
If we're already at 6:36, Sandra, is there anything that we're not aware of that you think that we should be aware of? And then I'll ask Mary the same thing, because we don't have much time left. Because we have to move on. We have to an agenda that we have to cover.
Okay. Just one of the other things I was going to talk about tonight was the complex care. Are you talking about what else we're going to talk about with the team? Yes. So we do have a complex care and disease management team within DDD, as well as the individuals that we use at the health plans for those issues. And so what we've done is we created an internal process where if we identify that members are having medical concerns that are chronic or complex, they can work with one of our DDD nurses to kind of help support them in taking care of their health. So the health plans obviously are really great. I've worked for health plans before and they offer some of those similar services. But our population, as we know, sometimes has special needs that unless you understand the workings, right, of our organization, it can be difficult to address. For example, we know sometimes members might live in a group home instead of with their parents or family members. And so, you know, calling the group home, trying to get information or trying to, you know, talk to the member may not work, right? And so sometimes those calls are auto dials and that type of thing. So we kind of try to put in place a similar process, not excluding the health plans, but to support them in trying to make contact with members and offer education and services and making sure that, you know, individuals have proper follow-up after hospitalizations, things like that. So that's just something that we wanted to let everyone know that we're trying to work through, because we understand that, you know, we can say we offer a benefit, right? But if people don't know how to access it or can't take advantage of it, it's no good. So that's something we're doing internally, because we obviously we have connection with the support coordinators directly. We can look them up and see who they are. And, you know, if there's a different way to contact the individual, they will let us know what that is. And that helps us to kind of make those connections a little bit better, and then include the health plans, because sometimes they do have trouble navigating that.
Do you, Sandra, do you still have your nurses assigned per zip code?
We do, yes.
I do want to put it on the record, and I do want to tell you personally, back in 2021, so we're talking 4 years ago, I actually spoke with the DDD nurse for my zip code, and I got to tell you, man, she was phenomenal. And really? Unfortunately, I don't remember her name. We were in the middle of COVID.
Okay.
She understood exactly what the problem was. Support coordination was worried about liability. They were trying to assign my son, unfortunately, nursing respite because he had seizures. We didn't need nursing respite. I was stuck in the house because it was the middle of COVID.
Okay.
And you know how hard it was to get a hold of a nurse in the middle of COVID. And so we were able to work it out. And I got to tell you, his best advocate was the DDD nurse who's assigned to 85392 zip code, my zip code. So whoever she is, please thank her. She was phenomenal. Okay. She understood immediately the situation, and she took care of it. So
awesome. I'm glad to hear that. And, you know, that is something that we're working towards. And that's what I mean about, it's not that we don't, you know, contract the health plans to do certain responsibilities, and they do a great job. But sometimes there's just things that we can navigate a little bit better because of being, you know, here, knowing who the players are and the actors in the community are, and how to make that outreach. So, and we're working, you know, even now to improve the things that we offer to members. You know, my team has worked on updating prevention plans and trying to get that education updated so that when we share things with the community, that they're appropriate and that they're accurate, and identifying people who might benefit from that extra education and support. So thank you.
Well, I personally appreciate it. Hey, Mary, is there anything, because I know we're cutting you off, but is there anything that you need to share with us that's not in the PowerPoint that we can read?
You know, just I'll give a high level update. And so as of November, I moved into a new position that was created. So that's program administrator over behavior supports and services. And so with that, we expanded our clinical team. We now help oversee the state operated clinical team. And so under my line of supervision now, we have program review committee, our behavior supported group homes, and state operated clinical team. We have six PRC teams, but we just got approval to hire an additional two PRC teams, and those will be kind of floater teams to help decrease the backlog and those timeframes for PRC.
Hey, Mary.
So other than that,
can I ask a quick question? Sandy? We have five districts. Mm-hmm. But now you said we're going to have 8 PRC teams. What are the additional 3 going to do, and how are we staffing those with volunteers?
Yeah, and so we got approval to hire those 2 additional teams, but it will be likely 3 or 4 months before they are hired, onboarded, and trained and ready to go. As far as volunteers, we have 2 volunteer coordinators that have been really working and targeting panel recruitment. We've also leveraged opportunities for professional development for state employees to participate on the panel, as well as getting some additional self-advocates. How those additional PRC teams will kind of work and function, we're still determining that. But when we brought on our 6th team last year, that mm-hmm. team was really focusing on those emergency review requests so that we could turn them around in 48 hours, as well as any of the exception requests. And so I know that District West is one of our busiest districts. We talked about potentially adding a 2nd PRC team to District West. So Amy's not doing 3 sessions per week so that we can kind of split that load. But we will keep you guys updated as we kind of navigate and determine those new positions.
And what are we going to be doing for, it's my understanding you need an ILC member on each PRC team. How are we covering that?
Yes, and so I know that the volunteer coordinators are actively recruiting IOC as well, but we've also explored and allowed some opportunities where we put the behavior plans and there's an electronic disposition sheet. So if IOC is not able to attend the session, they can review the behavior plan and provide their feedback in that way. And per our policy, we can proceed with the PRC as long as there's input from at least 3 panel members, one of them required to be IOC.
Okay. And how are we doing? This has been a thorn in my side since I joined the IOC. How are we doing with record integrity for PRC?
As far as the consistency in behavior plans?
As far as making sure that the record is accurate and consistent within both the behavior plan and the PCSP, that they actually match and that the information within them is timely.
Yeah, and so there's been several things, and maybe this would be best for me to put together a different presentation and come and talk a little bit about the behavior plan performance improvement project and some of the initiatives that we've taken just in the last year and a half. It is a 5-year project. We are in year 2. And so there has been additional language put in policy, training with support coordination, ensuring that they are looking at the consistency of those documents. And so.
And how about the PRC chairs, making sure that those records are consistent, timely, and accurate before sending them out to PRC members and providing oversight that way?
Yeah, and so that really, as far as when it comes to PRC, we are going to schedule it and move forward. And so it's really up to kind of the support coordination and the planning team to make sure that when they're reviewing that packet prior to going to PRC and they're giving their team agreement, that is the document that they're going to proceed with. And so currently PRC is not cross-referencing the documents prior to scheduling, but if that is something that's identified during the PRC session, it's written onto the disposition. And then teams would have 10 days to fix that.
Those are medical records that are inadequate as they stand. You know, I mean, we've had IOC members who've brought that to DDD's attention forever. Linda Meekum reviewed 26 files and 26 out of 26 were inadequate. So, hey, Michelle.
Can we add those to a topic for the next meeting? We're kind of Mary's gonna
cover it when she does the PRC update for us.
I can come back next quarter. You guys meet quarterly or monthly?
We meet monthly, but we traditionally break June and July.
Okay. Yeah, so. Happy to come back.
Okay. Speaking of which, Michelle, does anybody have any other questions? Because Michelle's telling me we need to move on, and she's right at 6:47. So we have more on the agenda to get to. Okay, if we're ready for our next item, I have it on my phone, so you'll have to give me a second because I have to pull it up here. Okay, our next item is housing discussions and recommendations. So I don't know who's doing that. Thank you, Rachel, Sandra, and Mary. We really appreciate it. I know it's a tough topic. And Michelle, you're going to send us the PowerPoint, right? And it's going to be included on the record. People will be able to access it online.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thank you for coming. We appreciate it. Sure. Okay. Who's doing housing for us? Michelle.
No one's doing housing. It was a discussion that the committee said they wanted to have in the last meeting. I think, Crystal, you wanted to discuss a few things?
I don't think so. I think there was just, they said that there was 100 people on the housing wait list. So it might not be a bad idea to make it part of the agenda just to get updates on, you know, what might be the issues with getting people housed. Since I'm working on housing with SMI as well. And then the other thing I can bring up with housing is, let me get off of this for a second. We have a, I don't know how to talk about, so part of, it is part of housing. We have a DDD member who, and we can put it on the agenda for next time, but we have a DDD member who approached us in Arizona Mad Moms, the individuals twice exceptional, so DDD and SMI. And they put him in an inappropriate berth. So with 9 other people. So I kind of gave them some resources, but I don't, maybe there's somebody on this committee I can reach out to privately. I don't know now that I said it on this committee if it's something, but I'm trying to help these individuals.
It's a Christina issue.
Is it a Christina issue?
Yes, it's a Christina issue.
It sure is.
Okay, let me get the information to you. I think I still have your email and stuff. And I'm trying to help them. I'll probably see them Friday. And I'll see how they're doing. Yeah, definitely a difficult situation. So very sad situation. Thank you.
Anybody else have anything about housing that they want to bring up?
No, but can we put it on the agenda to get like updates on how many people are housed and not housed? Because that's really going to be, I can just help with it because it's going to be a focus for SMI anyways. And I might as well add DDD to it. If we're having any housing issues, that's really going to be my focus for 2026. So whether it be the mixture with autism and or whatever intellectual disability with SMI, or if there's housing issues that just have, I think my issue with housing had to do with the person being non-Title 19 and non-ALTECs. So I'm also wondering, are these 100 people that aren't housed, are they not ALTECs?
So the people that are on our affordable housing wait list would be ALTECs, because in order to qualify for that program currently, you do have to have an ALTECs eligibility.
So if they're have a developmental disability, but they're not ALTECs, they don't qualify for any low income housing or anything or any assistance?
They would qualify for one of the voucher programs, but not the gosh, not 811, not Kofelt. Have we had, has Megan come to present at this?
She did, and that's where this is coming from. So, so that would lead me then to, again, a more serious concern is how many people have fallen through the cracks that have a developmental disability, but don't have the, are they on these housing, extended housing wait lists for these voucher programs? And because I know the case manager was unable to help me get on the voucher program. So now my concern is how many people are actually developmentally disabled that are unhoused that are falling through this crack. Does that make sense? And you know exactly what I'm talking about, right? Like people who
I sure do.
Autism, maybe working part-time, aren't able to be housed, can't, you know, don't want to stay at home for some reason. Okay.
Yeah, and I think especially with, you know, the specific situation that you and I had discussed before, that member wasn't even on an access complete care plan, so we couldn't even explore other options. And then we really have that major crack, I would say, where you're not on any access plan, you're not on Altex, you're not, and we're just really struggling. Right. So.
But you are developmentally disabled and on this navigator status of every 6 months. So
yep.
That would be data that I would be interested in. So that I can help in 2026. So again, it's not like this pressing issue. I don't know how we can put it on the agenda, but if I can get that information and what the gaps and services are, this would be the time to do it because we're going to really go to legislation next year with these unhoused individuals that are vulnerable.
Love it. Yeah, we can definitely work on getting any data for you.
Okay.
The procedure, Crystal, is to send an email to Christina and CC Angie, and they'll get you all the data they can get you. And if they can't get it for you, then they'll tell us and we'll do a formal request. We'll have a vote. Is that proper procedure, Michelle? Did I get the procedure right?
Well, preferably it'd be the vote and the request, but if, you know, if Christina and Angie are comfortable with you going to them and it's something that they're able to obtain, then that's, you know, that's kind of been a workaround to do.
Does that work for you, Angie?
It does, except my wheels are turning about, like, we're dependent upon a team reporting out that that person is unhoused, and that may not always come to the
surface. Oh, yeah, no, Angie.
So I'm like, my wheels are turning on how that data would even
work.
I just want to be transparent.
Yeah, Angie, I'm not expecting perfection at all. If you would like me to help, I'd like to offer that help to DDD, and because I care about our members who are unhoused and struggling. And so I know it's not going to be perfect. I know you have to depend on other things, but if I can get what you have and then what some of the gaps are, that's really all I need. And we could even, maybe we could put it on the agenda for a fall meeting, like after the summer. That would give you time to collect and we can converse, and then I can bring what we know and see if the IOC wants me to, you know, try to, I mean, I'm probably going to do it anyways, help with housing. So
yeah, Angie, we're not talking about specific individuals here.
No, I know that. I'm just thinking like numbers, right? So we have our numbers that are based on who's on the wait list, but that wait list is driven from a referral from the field. So there's that gap between, you know, number one, is the support coordinator aware that this person is unhoused? And number two, have they put in a referral to CARES for a voucher or some kind of placement? Yeah. So we would we'll have to really think that through and flesh that out to see what we can
get. What would not surprise me, and what we found out with SMI, is that probably the case managers are not referring to housing.
Sure, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that people are unhoused and just falling through the cracks because the only person who can refer them is the case manager. And if the case manager doesn't know how to do that, that's the gap. That's the gap I would expect. It's the same gap that's in SMI and in the behavioral health system. So again, I'm not expecting perfection or anything. Totally. I just think there's a lot more unhoused people than, and they're probably on the higher end of disability or getting out of jail or prison. And so they're falling through the cracks.
Mm-hmm. Well, as far as that is concerned, we got those folks covered because we're tracking everybody in justice. And our housing team is actually part of those justice collaboration meetings. So we're really trying to cover that gap specifically, just to kind of let you know. But okay. But we'll work on it. We'll work on
and
it.
Actually, maybe I can, again, I know this the IOC isn't the place to do this, but I would love to know how you're doing that, because that might help me to help a gap in the SMI system.
Okay.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Yeah, this is my thing for 2026. So any way that DDD wants me to assist or you can think of to help, that's what we're going in for next year. So
incredible.
Okay. Are we done with housing? Are we ready to go on to the Access EPD contract and director resignations? Michelle shared with us the statement that was from Access, right, Michelle, regarding the EPD contract settlement?
Yeah, the FAQ?
Yeah.
Yep.
So I asked her to put this on the agenda because I wanted everybody to be aware that the lawsuit was settled. There wasn't a decision about the process, the original process that was used, that last summer the Access hearing officer said was a faulty process and shouldn't have been followed. But the former Access director said was fine and chose not to take the administrative law judge's recommendation. So they sued in Superior Court, but it's now been settled. The only reason that this is important to us as a DDD IOC is because the DDD health plan contracts are coming up. Probably we're hearing 2029. So that process is very important to us. So does anybody have any questions after looking at the materials that Michelle provided for us? And I also wanted everybody to be aware that the Access Director Carmen Herrera resigned, along with the Arizona Department of Health Services Director. And please forgive me, I don't have her name in front of me. But there's two openings in the administration.
Yeah, I think there's three now.
Okay, who's the third?
I don't know. I was at a conference today, and I think there's three people from Access that are now step down. I'll have to
three people from Access, but the
Carmen, the other person, and then one other person from leadership, and I'm not sure where.
Okay.
But they announced it today. So okay. I don't know if it's new or a couple days old.
I don't know. Hey Frederica, is there anything that you want to add to that since you're from Access?
No, I don't have anything to add.
Okay. We appreciate it. I don't want to put you on the spot. I just wanted to see if there was any other updates.
No, I haven't been in the office the last couple of days, but everything that you guys have is public record. So that's right. All I would have in anyhow.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Access is just going to keep doing Access, and our health plans will keep doing their health plan thing, and DDD will keep doing its DDD plan. So, and we'll just wait to find out who the new leadership is. But it's business as usual until then. So does anybody have anything else that they want to add about the EPD contract or director resignations? Okay. The next item is the legislative update. Last time we met, We were worried about the DDD supplemental budget. The good news is the DDD supplemental budget passed. I assume everybody saw that information, and everybody saw the information about the Parents as Paid Caregivers program. And there's, maybe I'm reading this wrong and you guys can pop in and correct me, but I didn't see any additional requirements that weren't already talked about in the waiver. Am I missing something, Angie?
Well, there were a couple of things that came out in the final approved House Bill 2945 that were a little bit different. And that was the 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. requirement for parents that they couldn't provide care unless it was extraordinary and documented on their plan during sleep hours, basically. And then the parents it prohibits parents from billing for attendant care while the child is at school, while they're receiving any kind of inpatient treatment or what's the other, hold on, I got the three right here because I knew you were going to ask.
And then the last one is the one agency.
Yes, exactly. And that, and the one agency that they have to work for one agency.
Well, that's actually
under the Parent as Paid Caregiver program.
That's actually, it's interesting because it's per child, which was, in my opinion, well written, because that means that if you have two separate households, if you have parents who are living in separate households, they have to work for the same agency. And I assume that's for oversight purposes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It's per child. And the other one was while the child is in a clinical setting. So like while a child is receiving therapy, the parent couldn't be paid to provide care during that time. And another one that came up was the a parent cannot bill for housekeeping, laundry, and meal preparation, of which they would provide that same care for a child that does not have a disability. So a couple of things came up that we that were different than what we had originally thought about, like the 40-hour limit and for both parents. Per child, yeah.
Does anybody have any questions on that? Obviously, the fiscal year 26 budget, they're in negotiations and who knows?
Yeah, we still have a couple more tense months, but, you know, if families and advocacy agencies are going to be as fierce as they were getting this supplemental through and we can keep up that advocacy, I think we'll get there. But yeah, it's still a negotiation.
Okay. Well, hopefully we'll be fierce.
Yeah.
So if nobody has anything else on the legislative update, then we'll go to the update from the IOC quarterly statewide chairs meeting. I attended on our behalf. And it's not just me who is it's not just me who is worried about ECSPs. Eva from District Central is worried about strategic planning and implementation on the PCSP. So we had a lot of talk about that. And Eva actually line for line reads every policy change that comes down the road. I confess I skim them, but man, she reads them line for line. So Christina's shaking her head. So she does an amazingly thorough job on our behalf, and she writes up summaries and she reads them all, and somebody's got to do it. So, like I said, I read them. I just don't read them to the depth that she reads them unless they catch my attention and I have specific questions. We also talked about, and this is important, we talked about a second level review process for ECT, which is electric something therapy. Just
electric convulsant therapy.
For those who may have forgotten from last year or who weren't with us last year, we have a problem because we have a statute on the books that says that DDD members, it's from the 70s, DDD members cannot receive electroshock therapy. And ECT is a type of electroshock therapy. Pacemaker is a type of electroshock therapy, and so is a vagus nerve stimulator. So basically, it's been interpreted that DDD can't pay for ECT, but if the DDD member has a primary commercial insurance, then they can go ahead and get ECT therapy. DDD just can't pay for it. And I don't know, because it wasn't really spelled out, whether or not the health plan can pay for it on behalf of a DDD member. It's kind of a gray area. So we talked about it, and we talked about how in the future, this is something that is going to need very careful thought to it. Hey, Cynthia.
So I know of at least one member that's a DD Access member where the health plan paid.
Okay.
And I will tell you that the family was not happy about it. The provider was advertising in an inpatient facility with flyers on the wall.
Yeah.
And the adult with autism decided that that's what they needed based on the advertising. And the family was very upset. And so
the adult didn't have a guardian.
No.
Okay.
And I do think that our members deserve access to that in some situations. And mm-hmm. I don't think that there should be a covered service for everybody else but our members. But I agree that there has to be some kind of safeguard to make sure that our members aren't exploited.
And from what we're hearing, the medical community is not providing that safeguard in some instances.
It seems to
that's
me
what we're afraid of.
I know it's illegal, but they're getting away with it. They're advertising on the walls of inpatient facilities. So, I mean, if we're not going to regulate, if the regulator's not going to regulate,
right,
then we have a problem, right?
Yeah, and we, you know, at the DDD governance committee meeting, I specifically asked Zane what would happen if we had DDD QVA providers who stopped providing services. And he basically said in the middle of this budget crisis that they weren't considering any sort of enforcement for QVA providers that stopped providing services. He didn't say that he had any, but he said that at that time they were not considering it. So enforcement is a very delicate thing. I understand very well Zane's answer because he has to maintain a provider network, and it's very tough when you're not paying them. But enforcement doesn't seem to be a strong suit of either DDD or access. So,
well, and when we're having these budgetary issues, I have a lot of concern about some providers misbehaving or telling families to drop their private insurance or telling families to drop their Medicare so that the provider can be paid more or more quickly. And this is definitely something I think we need to bring to the legislature and hold DDD and Access accountable, making sure that they're holding providers accountable.
Well, maybe we need to put that on the agenda in August or September.
I would like to do that. I have a lot of concern about what providers are doing.
Okay, so the other thing that was brought up is that one of the benefits of the Parents as Paid Caregiver program is that parents are getting training that they weren't getting before. So the other thing that we talked about is we talked about how many DDD members are currently incarcerated, and the number 33 was brought to our attention. I don't know if that's changed since last month, but does that sound right, Angie? You were at the meeting. My notes say 33.
It's around, actually, I can get you the number from today. Give me one second.
33 was the number that was reported out at that meeting.
At that meeting last month. That's what I'm saying.
Yep.
So is it more than 33, Christina?
Give me one second. It is, oh, 30 adults, 3 juveniles. So yeah, we're still at 33.
Okay. And then we talked about NCQA training, and DDD is going forward with that. And it's looking good, but it's still a long process, right, Angie?
Yep. We hope that everyone will be done by the end of May, actually. And when I say everyone, all support coordination. And then new hires will get that training built into their new hire training in May. Well, actually this month.
So do we know, do we have an ETA on when that certification will actually be granted?
I think, hold that thought. I do have that. I want to say mid-June is when they apply, okay. And we're expecting decisions in October.
Okay.
That sounds right. There's like an interview process, I think, in June, and then some amount of weeks after that we should hear.
Yeah. And just so that everybody's aware, this NCQA certification is like, hospitals are certified by the Joint Commission. Everybody knows what the Joint Commission is. You hear about the Joint Commission. This NCQA certification is the equivalent for DDD. And is Arizona the first state to apply for this, Angie?
Yep. Well, so I don't know if we're the first state to apply, but we're definitely the first state that's
that far.
Yeah.
Okay. So So if it's granted, we'll be the first state that it's granted to.
Yep. I have the survey begins on June 24th. Okay. And we have different types of survey levels. Mm-hmm. And at the end of September, we hope to have the accreditation and it'll move forward to 2020 through 2026 and beyond.
And I don't want to misspeak, so please correct me if I'm wrong, but all of this work that DDD has done for the certification, that has all been rolled into DDD's policies, all that. So even if for some reason somebody wakes up tomorrow and decides we don't want to proceed and get this certification, we've still benefited.
1,000%. Absolutely. Yeah. If it was just about the certification and had no weight on whether or not the member experience was going to be improved, I would hope that we wouldn't waste all this time. So it's only a condition of that we have the ability to create plans that improve individuals' lives.
And one of, and again, this is my personal opinion, but I'm going to throw it out there anyway. I think one of the reasons that the new QVA was written as well as the new QVA is written, and I will tell you, as a professional compliance officer, I think it's very well written along with the tool. I credit that to the NCQA process and getting ready for that process. Correct me if I'm wrong, Angie, but I see the influence there.
Oh yeah, it's got tentacles in every aspect of the division's business. Yeah. So it reaches so many areas, almost all the areas.
Now, whether or not there's compliance accountability is a whole nother question, but we don't need to go there. So. Next meeting, does anybody have any questions about, before I go to the next item, does anybody have any questions about the statewide meeting? The next one is July 23rd at 10 a.m. And all IOC members are invited to that meeting. You don't have to be a chair to go to that meeting. I go because I'm obligated to go as the chair, and it's more convenient for the rest of you not to have to sit through another 2-hour meeting. You can get my little update with help from Michelle and Angie, but I would love to have you come to that meeting. So, okay, we need a discussion and vote on our next meeting. Traditionally, we take June and July off. Does anybody want to meet in June and July, or do you want to take them off? You tell me what you want to do. I can be here for those two meetings, or I can enjoy my June and July.
Well, I would make a motion that we take June and July off.
A second.
Okay. Can we get a vote to take June and July off? Since we do this, do you have something, Pam, that you want to throw in?
Oh no, I was just smiling.
You
at
want
Cynthia?
You want June and July?
July's fine. Yep, off.
1, 2, 3. Do we still have?
I vote yes. Tia took my headphones.
Is Jamie still
like my headphones off?
I'm here.
Okay. Does anybody vote no? Pat, are you a no vote? Okay, all in favor of taking June and July off like we traditionally do, say aye.
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 Okay, the ayes have it. We're taking June and July off. So our next meeting is the first Wednesday in August. Hey, Michelle, do you have your calendar in front of you, please?
Yeah, we're looking at August the 6th.
August 6th. And does 6 p.m. still work for everybody?
Yes, 6 is good.
Okay.
Yes, it does.
Okay, so August 6th, 6 p.m. Okay, now, do we have any new committee members? Michelle? Okay.
No, the potential candidate, I've reached out a couple of times and I have not heard back.
Okay. I'm wondering if we can just revise our process a little bit. When we get a potential candidate before the meeting, instead of just sharing the resume with Cynthia and me, can we share it with the whole committee when we know that they're going to come so that they can see it in advance?
Yeah, I'll probably, Krista will probably apply over the summer here while we're all gone. She'll probably be ready to come on in August or September. Okay. If we vote her on.
I don't want to speak for the rest of the committee members, but I can tell you she's a shoo-in. So she's got your vote. She's got my vote. She's got Cynthia's vote. And as soon as Pam meets her, she's going to vote for her. Jamie's going to vote for her. So this is, you'll see, Pam, this is an amazing woman.
Yeah.
Who is a DDD member. And we are going to, Michelle, you and I are going to have to work together because she uses an AUGCOM device. So we're going to have to make sure that her voice is heard at all times and she can fully participate in the meetings. But she's a DDD member who, she's what, 36?
Yeah, she's a huge advocate for her community, just a huge advocate. So
she just became an SLPA. She's got her associate's degree and she's working on finishing up her bachelor's degree, right?
I think she's already got an education degree. Now she's got the speech language degree.
Did she get her bachelor's degree already?
I think so. I'm not 100% positive, but I think she's got it in education. So
but she has been a DDD member. Because she's an advocate, I'm not sharing anything with you that she does not share with the general public. She has CP, so she can't use spoken word to communicate. But man, she's a dynamo. The first time I met her in a meeting, she and a couple of her friends, they were talking about how their parents didn't want them using Uber. And I had my mom hat on and I basically said, you know, I can understand they're worried about your personal safety. Man, these three women just looked at me and they said, you know what? They literally said, we have the right to be subject to danger just like everybody else.
She sits on the DDD self-advocate meeting, and I think we all share that sentiment that she's just phenomenal.
Yeah, they schooled me. I mean, but I'm kind of happy that I'm not their mother because, you know, obviously as a mother, I would want to protect my child. So, I don't want to be paternalistic and sexist, but I'm glad I had a boy and not a girl. So. Okay. Discussion and review of incident reports and behavior plans. Does anybody have any?
I do.
Okay.
I have a question after reviewing one incident report, and without going into any details about the person. Well, yeah. I don't have details about the person. The report right. itself was for someone that had an unexplained bruise on their arm. My concern in reviewing it, it sounded like during the investigative process, there was a note that when they spoke to the group home, no one at the group home, none of the staff spoke English. And I didn't know if group homes, I mean, I don't know what they spoke. I don't know if it was a Spanish speaking situation. The member herself, what is an autism, has autism and is mainly nonverbal, it said. But I had concerns about the no English speaking staff when it came to potentially emergencies, medication management, and things like that. And I didn't know if anyone could fill me in if there are non-English speaking group homes, or is that a...
Hey, Diane?
Their concern.
Yes.
How does quality handle that when you come up with a situation like that?
So, excuse me, I do know in policy that group homes are supposed to have staff that can articulate as well as understand the member per their PCSP to have the appropriate language. So if that is something that is not being adhered to, then we would inform network and SC and go through the proper procedures.
Okay, so when we find something like that, do you want us to shoot it to Michelle and then Michelle will bring it to your attention?
That would be great.
So Pam, can you send Michelle an email about, you have the, there should be some sort of a number on there.
Yes, I have it. And I had just seen it yesterday. So yeah, Michelle, I'll get that to you. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So I believe I have it. You commented on an incident report and I did forward that up to you.
Okay, yes, and I do have that information. So I just received it. So I have not had an opportunity to go through them.
Look at us. Look at you.
Pam.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. How is the system supposed to work? Does anybody have anybody else have any concerns? So we know the referral to Michelle is, you know, we never worry about Michelle doing her job. Just for the record, we rely on Michelle a lot. So, and Christina.
I rely on Michelle a lot too, I'll be honest. So it works out nicely.
Okay, anything about behavior plans? I think I asked enough questions of Mary DiCarlo about behavior plans tonight. But is there any concerns that anybody has about specific behavior plans? Okay, do we have any possible discussion review about policy issues or concerns besides the budget, which there's not much we can do? Or are there any additional presentations?
I know we already said we're going to do a presentation, but I want it to be noted that I just have a lot of concern around provider behavior and the effect on provider behavior on our budget. So I definitely want that. And then the second thing I really was hoping we could add to the agenda is I'm profoundly concerned about DMG closing, with that being our only integrated clinic. And it wasn't what I wanted. I wanted something even better, but it was the only thing we have and we're losing it. And I think that's an important thing to talk about. And I don't know if we can add that to the agenda too.
Yeah, maybe we can get Sandra back. I'm sure Sandra's going to love me, but I like Sandra. I thought she had some really good answers for us. Maybe we can ask her to come back and talk about what we're doing with DMG closing and how DDD is looking to help our members, if they're working on anything, and maybe somebody from the health plans, from United and from Mercy Care.
And I don't know if it's even possible to get him, but God, his name just left my brain.
You're talking about Jared Perkins.
Jared Perkins, who's running the Children's Center in Tucson. And that's the closest thing that now exists. I know he's serving the same population of CRS, and somehow he's made it work with the changes that Access and DDD made to the CRS contract. He might have some insight too. I don't know if he...
Nicolette and Zane have been in active meetings with not only Jared, but other leaders in talking about what that transition looks like for those kiddos that need interdisciplinary services, right? I don't know that Sonia is going to be the right person, but if the questions are posed, we can absolutely find out who's the right person to answer those questions for sure.
Oh, yeah, Dr. Loki's equivalent because she does quality, so the clinical doctor.
Mm-hmm. It might be, yeah, absolutely. I'm not.
I don't know. I just like Sandra. I thought she did well.
Copeland.
Yeah.
She's our doctor over medical management.
You say Copeland?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I know there have been meetings already to discuss transition. And I know Jared was actually part of those meetings, like I said, even though, you know, it relates to the Phoenix kiddos. But
well, it's actually, Angie, they were actually cradle to grave.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's the thing that was so important.
And that's true. Yeah.
Society had been working with DMG about trying to expand. I mean, the thing that DMG had is that not only did they have primary care and specialists, OT, PT, behavioral health, mental health, AAC, they even had mental health providers who could work with people with AAC devices, which is the only place I know in Arizona that can even do that.
Yeah.
And I was talking to John Myers today. There is a consortium of ASU, U of A, and Mayo, and we were discussing trying to get a meeting with them to maybe try to leverage that to bring to DMG. This is a huge loss. And the other thing is they did a really good job of serving the Hispanic community who didn't speak English. And now where are they gonna go? And I was at the Spanish Autism Support Group, and they were sharing their real concern about what are their choices now.
Is that Ghana?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So that the only reason that I asked her, so that everybody knows, Ghana is us. It's District West.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they do serve people from all over the valley, they're predominantly, they were started here in District West, and in their concentration area is District West. So those are our people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now we're ready for, does anybody have any policy notification, DDD or access policy notification, review and discussion? I don't really have anything to discuss.
I can only add, and inform the team that the access policies regarding PPCG and some other stuff are going to be released hopefully by the end of this week, but we haven't gotten a firm date yet. And we'll be looking to release them, our version of those policies, to you all and the DDACs and the tribal, our tribal partners, at the same time, so we can try and line up those days.
Okay.
Is it possible that the tool that is going to be used for the attendant care, I have the EPD tool. I would really like to see the DDD tool and be able to compare the tools.
From what I understand, it is an exhibit and it will be released at the same time.
Excellent.
That's my understanding, yeah.
Thanks.
So they're coming.
I'm sorry about that. I had a solicitor at my door. So I didn't know if one of my neighbors had an emergency, but no, it was somebody trying to sell me something, which is completely against our HOA policies. But
anyway. Solar. They're looking for your solar panels.
They're on my roof. So the only thing we don't have is batteries. But okay, are we ready for DDD staff updates? You want to take it away, Michelle? Please.
Sure. Now, Angie, I know you had a very, very busy day, so I'm not sure if you were coming with a presentation, I mean, an update or not, but I thought I'd ask you.
The only thing I could say is that we are going to be hiring for a redactor. It's a very important position, and we just had someone resign. So we're going to be recruiting for a redactor to replace that person, like, in a hot minute, because we can't be without. We want to make sure we maintain that 3-day turnaround to you guys. And that may mean that everybody jumps in to do redactions. But we'll get the job done. And
hey, Angie, let's just make sure the record is really clear. You have been hitting those 3 days.
Yes.
We're all getting those email updates. You have been hitting those 3 days.
So, so proud of the work that this team has done. Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for that. And then I'm not sure. Oh, Christina's texting me on the side saying I'm stealing her updates. Do you want to talk about the retirement? Since this is the last meeting of a certain someone, Christina?
Sure. I believe she announced it at the statewide meeting, but if
no, I did not.
You didn't? Oh, well.
So I will make my announcement.
You make your own announcement. I've got no update. Everybody else has them.
I am going to be 65 in June, and I am retiring. So my last working day will be the 18th. My last day on DDD payroll will be the 20th. But on the 19th and the 20th, I'm going to be in Alaska celebrating the summer solstice with a friend of mine.
Nice.
So I'm really looking forward to that. Yeah. Yeah. I had planned on, I was originally planned on waiting until next December, but as you guys have probably noticed, recent life changes made me decide that I would be better off retiring as soon as I could, and making sure that I have health coverage, because not having health coverage, you don't want to mess around with that. So I know that we'll get an amazing replacement for me. I'm going to miss my team, supporting Michelle and Morgan and the redactors. Working with Christina and Angie, you know, working with Leah prior, but working with Angie. In all my years of working, and I worked for AT&T for 17 years and had some other jobs as well. I've only been with the division. My start date was 11/12/13. That's how it's easy to remember because the numbers are consecutive. It was the day after Veterans Day. So I only have 11 years with the state. But I have to say that I've loved every minute of every position I had, even quality, for the most part. Diane knows what I'm talking about. that was probably one of the most challenging jobs I've ever had. But when I came here to the CARES Administration, this has been the most wonderful work experience I've had in all my life. And I'm no spring chicken. So, I mean, I think that the CARES Administration is the best name because the people in this department actually do care. They care about the members and they care about each other, and people are just supportive and kind. I'll never forget. I'll just share this one story and then I'll be quiet. But when I was in quality, if I was getting messaging, we have like a message system, like a Google chat. If I was getting messages at 8 o'clock in the morning, they scared the hell out of me because it meant that somebody was missing, somebody died, an entire agency's staff abandoned the workplace. I mean, it was usually a big deal. And I think it was my second week in the department. And I went downstairs to make a cup of coffee, and all of a sudden I can hear my chats going ding, 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 ding. And I could still run upstairs in those days. And I raced up the stairs up here to my office thinking, literally, oh my God, who died? And all it was everybody in the team, in the CARES chat wishing each other good morning. And I just sat and laughed because, and, you know, just the communication, the camaraderie, it's a wonderful department. I think DDD is a wonderful place to be because for the majority of people who have been here for any length of time, We're all here to help people be their best selves, whatever that might look like. And, you know, making sure that our members are safe and that they're being cared for and that there's all kinds of people looking out for them. And you guys in the IOC are part of that too. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why you're here, is to be looking over things and making sure that our members are getting their needs met and that they're being taken care of. So, you know, it's wonderful. I'll miss talking to folks, but I can collect phone numbers, and I would much rather chat with them with a glass of iced tea on my back patio. And after I get back from Alaska, my next trip is going to be 2 weeks on Cape Cod. I'm originally from near Cape Cod, and I'm planning on spending 2 weeks sitting on the beach. If anybody wants to see me, I'll let them know what beach I'm going to be at, and they can pull up a blanket or a towel. So,
Joan, I, in this instance, I can speak for the members of the DDD District West IOC. Thank you very much for all of your hard work, but most important, thank you for your heart. So I said it before the meeting started, but I will say it on the record. I'm not known as someone who blows smoke. So when I say good things about people, it's very heartfelt. And as far as I'm concerned, it's very true. And I don't think you've ever heard me say anything negative about you in the time that I've had the privilege to work with you. I appreciate all that you have done for Jeffrey and Michelle and Morgan and everybody else, and what you do for Christina. And I know that Angie doesn't worry about us, because if Michelle's not taking care of us, you're taking care of us. Mm-hmm. So the only time that I have issues that I bring to Angie's attention are because I know that they're issues that are out of your authority to solve. Because if they were within your authority, I would never bother Angie. There would be no need, just like when they're outside of Christina's authority, I bring in Angie. Because otherwise, if they were within Christina's authority to solve, same with Michelle, same with Morgan, they would all take care of it. You have provided amazing leadership for your team, and we appreciate it here at District West. And if you are ever in Avondale, the coffee is always on, or whatever you drink a choice. I know you guys have heard me talk about my fully stocked liquor cabinet behind me. Christina, it is, the liquor cabinet is literally behind me, but you are welcome in my home anytime, Joan. And where I come from, that is the highest compliment that you can pay someone, to invite them to your home to break bread with you at their table. So there's always a seat at my table for you, Joan. And
thank you, Dee.
I'm very sorry that you're retiring, but I am very glad for you, because I want you to have the best life possible.
And I'm planning on grabbing all the gusto I can while I can.
And I can tell you that if your replacement does not do a good job, I will be the first person to tell Angie, and I will haunt her until she gets somebody of your caliber in that seat. So have no fear. Your people will be taken care of, and the work will continue.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Yes, you.
Congratulations.
So, and Angie knows that's not a threat, that's a promise.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
But knowing the team that Leah assembled and that Angie continues to tweak, Joan, I'm not worried. She's going to find a worthy replacement, just like Angie is a worthy replacement for Leah and has taken the job and extended it with her own skills and talents, and it's ever onward and upward. So
thank you, thanks for that. It's only been four and a half months. I'm learning every day. It's incredible.
We never stop learning, Angie, but it's been a difficult 4.5 months, I should say a challenging 4.5 months. But Leah trained you well. You hit the ground running. So
yep.
My first My first boss, when I came to the East District, they stuck me up in North Central, and I live in East Mesa. So try figuring that one. But was Barb Piccone, and I've been her stalker ever since. I was a support coordinator when she was a soup. She went to quality. I followed her there. She's the one that elbowed me and needled me to put in for the supervisor position. And then after me being there for a year, she left and I became the manager. And then I followed her here. And one of the best things, I mean, I've learned so much from her. If anybody's been my mentor, it's been her. And one of the things that I learned that really commands respect from everybody else that you're working with is when you go and ask a question, like I would go to her and be like, Barb, especially with quality, this whole situation. And she'd look at me and she'd smile and she'd say, that's a really good question. Let's find out. And then the two of us would, you know, make a call here, make a call there. And I really think that that's one of the things that makes a really good leader is they don't know everything. But like Angie said, she's learning new things every day. And you got to say, well, who do I get in touch with? And you call the person that used to do the job and they tell you, oh, I don't do that anymore. It's so-and-so. And you move yourself around, you make connections and you engage yourself with whoever you need to. But I just had to share that because Barb is my go-to and my mentor. So,
yeah, well, she better not be retiring anytime soon.
I don't think so. But I wouldn't tell if I knew anyway. That's up to her. But I don't, right. Seriously, I don't think so.
Okay. At least not for the next few months. Do we have any other staff updates? Diane?
Yes.
Do we have any quality updates? Are we getting our database anytime soon?
Which database is that one?
The Access database that's actually going to be... used as a database instead of glorified microfiche.
Besides Focus, I don't know if that'll ever go away. As far as I know, we're still forging forward. We do not have an ETA yet. I know we're still learning the portal. It definitely has its it definitely has its moments. So we're learning it. I think some of the issues are porting it through all the way through the other systems. Again, I don't know, since I've been here for 6 years, I've been using Focus. So it's going to be a huge changing for me since, you know, the portal has been something that I know our triage is definitely works out of all of their investigations, you know, goes through the Access portal system, and then right. It just kind of spools through to our end. So it'll definitely be a learning curve. It has been all around for sure, but there are definitely some pluses on there. There's certainly some misses, but we'll figure it out like we always do. So
any tracking and trending here for District West quality that we ought to know about?
As far as I have, I don't see anything. We've had over 700 incidents this month. Other than that, we've had three incidents of reported death. Just haven't seen anything really track and trend. We are monitoring. Yes.
So that everybody knows, Cynthia and I get those death notices. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to be the first one that you hear from if I think that there's anything questionable. Well, actually, I'll tell Michelle and Michelle will tell you. But just for the record, I'm still astounded by the age of DDD members who are passing.
Yeah.
I mean, their life expectancy is a lot longer than we thought even 20 years ago. So we must be doing something right if we're keeping them alive. And hopefully they're living quality lives.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, okay. Hey, Larry. Do you have an ADOA update for us?
No updates from ADOA this month for the committee.
Can you do me a favor?
Of course.
Can you send me a hot link to what I'm supposed to do for my training?
Yes, I will.
They didn't send me a hot link.
You didn't get a link? Okay.
No, I didn't get, I need the
ID10T link?
I'm not too sure what that is, but I'm on it. I'll make sure you get it.
Spell it out for yourself and you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. So,
oh, gotcha. Okay.
I'm on the 101. This is what I need to do. Just click on here and then you can get what you need for this training, which I still don't understand why we do it, because we have nothing to do with contracting, but I'll take the half an hour and fill it out. I just need to get to it.
Yeah. I had a discussion today regarding a new approach to this training that we're having to do. Streamline it a little bit better. Take the computers out of it, that sort of thing. So hopefully next year I'll have a better plan and a better way to look at it and do it for the group. More on the horizon on that, but I understand. I understand that TradeCorp is clunky and doesn't work. It's not very intuitive, but it's the world I live in, so I need to do the best I can with it.
And the questions that we sent you, it hasn't been 21 days, so.
That's correct. It's due you'll have it next week, early next week.
Can you give us a little preview? Did the Attorney General actually respond or no?
They didn't respond to me. I had a phone call with them, and they agreed with everything that was said. Oh. On your end and my end in regards to got to stick to the statute, but they were going to take a little deeper dive on it.
Good.
And have a little bit more polished response than probably something that I would have done for the committee. So I should have that in my hand, in my inbox by I would think Tuesday.
Well, I don't, the record straight, it was a very difficult situation and it's not about blame. It's about having clear policy from here forward. And that's what made it really difficult for us, because I don't think anybody had a problem with the intention. It's just, unfortunately, District West has a retired New York attorney who has to follow statutes, so I had no choice. But that doesn't mean, with my personal situation, that I could speak for the committee, so we just needed clarification on stuff, but it really was an admirable attempt to do what was best for the community. So
I agree.
It's policy clarification. That's all it is. Yeah. So, and I think we made it really clear on the record multiple times, right, Angie? So. It's like the ECT situation. There's a statute on the books. What do we do? So, okay. And updates from the health plans and access. Frederica, you got anything for us?
Hey, Dee. I don't have any updates, but happy to take anything back you guys may have.
Okay, and I don't see, Dawn is on here, but I know Wendy left us. Hey, Dawn, do you have anything for us?
I don't tonight, Dee. Thank you.
So we appreciate you and Wendy hanging out and being there for us.
Of course.
So, Michelle. You want to finish us up and then we'll dismiss.
Okay. Well, thank you guys. I really appreciate all the kind words tonight. For District West, your metrics for the April incident reports that were loaded to the committee, there was a total of 770 incident reports provided, 51 open and 719 closed reports. The Developmental Disability Advisory Council. They'd like to hear from individuals and families who receive supports and services from the division. Thursday, May 15th at 10 a.m. I have a host a public forum, topics that they're interested in hearing about. Do you have unanswered questions or input regarding the Division of Developmental Disabilities? Are sports and services meeting your needs? What is working for you? What is not working for you? What is your vision for supports in the future? I'll send out the links for that in case anybody's interested or they want to share it out for somebody they know who may be. And then the next DDD public town hall meeting for members, families, and providers is held Thursday, June 5th, 6 to 8 p.m. And DDD will present updates and announcements to the public through this meeting. And DDD typically follows that pattern of hosting public town halls on the first Thursday of the month. And I'll share that out in email as well.
So that's tomorrow.
No, we've already had the first Thursday in May. That was last week. So June would be the next one.
Okay.
That's it. That's all I've got for today.
And you're gonna email us all that PowerPoint, right?
Yes, I do already have a copy of that PowerPoint, so I'll definitely get that out too.
And it's gonna be included on the ADOA website, right?
Yes, we put the snippets of the slides in the meeting minutes with the transcripts.
Good. Hey, Angie, what's up?
We are going to have, with Access, a public forum on the 20th and 21st of this month to talk about the timelines around providing public comment on those policies that are being released and kind of give a high level overview of what's in those policies. So I'll make sure Michelle has that information so she can include it in her email where she summarizes that. And I think the announcement's going out tomorrow. So
I have a question for you on those policies. Mm-hmm. There's nothing that has to go back to CMS, right?
No, the only thing that has to go back to CMS is not in these policies.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, there's something in the House bill or, the House bill that they have to discuss with, CMS, but it's not anything in policy just yet.
Okay. Good.
And that's the 6 month waiting time for parents. Oh. Yeah, that's got to go back to CMS, but that's not what these policies are.
Well, yeah, you can't make that policy until CMS approves it.
Right, yeah, it has to be written into the waiver. Yeah.
Forgot about that.
Yeah.
Forgot about that 6 month waiting period. And that actually is the first time in DDD history that there's any sort of waiting period. Am I correct?
Yeah, it is. Yep, absolutely.
But that doesn't mean that if those services are approved services in the PCSP, a non-parent can provide the services.
Oh, absolutely. Assessed need is a completely separate process. And then after the assessed need comes, who's the most appropriate person to provide that care? Absolutely.
Yeah, I just, I mean, we still, obviously everything is conditioned on the availability of providers, but we have no wait list.
Yep, that's correct. We are one of the only states, if not the only state, that does not have a wait list.
Okay. So does anybody else have anything? I need a motion and a second, and then we can go ahead and adjourn the meeting.
I motion that we adjourn the meeting.
Can I have a second?
I can second. He has seconds.
Anybody against? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Unanimous.
It is 8:01 on May 7th, 2025. The DDD District West Oversight Committee is now adjourned. We meet again on August 6th at 6 p.m. Same bat channel, same time. Thank you all very much. And again, Joan, please take my contact information with you. I'm serious. The coffee will be on. The pastries will be here. I'll even go to the cafe and get pastries for you. Enjoy your retirement.
Yes. Congratulations.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Thank you. Good night.
Great summer.
Bye.
Yeah, have a great summer, guys.
Bye.